My name is Stephanie Leedy. I'm 50 years old, but I'll be 51 in just a couple of days. This is a reminder. Today's date is September 9th, 2010. We are in Kansas City, Missouri, and I am Jim Leedy's daughter, and luckily so.
Thank you, darling. I am Jim Leedy. I am 79, but I'm pushing 80 pretty quickly. This is September the 9th, 2010. The location is Kansas City, Missouri, and this is my wonderful daughter, whom I don't think I could have gotten through life this far without her.
Okay, don't make me cry already. Well, I had a hard time trying to think about what to ask you, because I know you so well.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, I've been able to spend probably more years with my father than most kids ever do.
Yeah,
or ever are allowed to.
Right, it's great.
You were my teacher,
mm-hmm.
my father,
mm-hmm.
my friend,
mm-hmm.
the person I told everything to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I guess I was thinking about this and thought you've had, I know, at least I think, a really wonderful life. You've been able to travel. You've been a mentor, teacher to, well, I'd probably say thousands.
Yeah, thank you.
You were able to amazingly make your art and teach and be a great teacher at the same time. And you probably, more than anything, founded a arts district in downtown Kansas City called the Crossroads by being a brave, maybe brave, also maybe a little naive, buying a bunch of buildings.
Yeah, when there was no future for them, really. But I had this dream that there would be a future.
Well, I know. But a lot of people wouldn't have done that.
No. Absolutely not.
They would not have had the vision to do that.
In fact, when I try to get people involved, they'd say things like, "You'll never get people to come down here. This is a part of the city that people won't come to." Or, "Maybe if you buy these buildings, we could turn them into a parking space instead of an arts district." They just didn't have the vision
mm-hmm.
that I had for it. That's very true.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you would like to see down there that maybe hasn't happened? Because as people in Kansas City know, when the artists started moving into your buildings, the coffee shops moved in, more galleries started
mm-hmm.
opening up.
Mm-hmm.
Then the developers moved in, mm-hmm. and so there's a lot happening down there. But I'm wondering if there's anything that you would that hasn't happened that you would like to see.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good question. Before I answer it, I would like to say one thing too, that if I had had a million daughters to choose from, I would have chosen you, darling. We've had a great life, I agree with you. Gosh, the things that we did together, like riding our horses, and I could tell stories about that. You know, how at three, I looked out the window, and when you were three, I looked out the window and I saw this little tiny baby charging by on a horse. And I thought, "Oh, my God, is that Stephanie?" And I ran out there to get you, and you were already gone. You were racing a car that was driving up the side of a road that went by our place on your horse. And the guy says, oh, yeah, she meets me out here every morning and races me up this hill. And I was just flabbergasted. I just couldn't believe it. And you've been that kind of yourself, chance taker and explorer all of your life. And it's made me very, very happy to be your father.
Stephanie, do you remember that? Mm-hmm. Do you remember the first time you did it? Or why you did it?
Well, I would sit on my horse and wait, because we were, at that time, this was in Ohio, and I would wait for a car to come by
and race it.
And to give you a little more visual, I had a pixie haircut, wore no shirt, maybe had on my shorts and my red cowboy boots.
Yeah. And your feet stuck straight out, not down around the horse, because they weren't long enough.
I think the people in the cars, they'd come by, and I'm sure that they thought, oh, what a cute little boy over there.
Yeah, right.
The only way I could get up on that horse, too, was climb up on the fence and pull the horse over and make a leap over onto his back. Her back.
Yeah. What's a him, wasn't it? Well,
Britches.
Brandy. Oh, was it Britches? Oh.
No, not Britches. Oh, gosh. That was Lady.
Oh, exactly, Lady. Well, we've had several horses. Mm-hmm. It's hard to keep them all straight.
Mm-hmm.
But that was indeed very wonderful and delightful, even though it scared me to death. I asked my neighbors, I said, have you seen this? And they said, oh, yeah, she's out there every morning racing us up the hill. And it was just amazing. But you've been like that the rest, all of your life, and always a surprise and a pleasure to me.
Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're very welcome. Now, what was the question again?
I guess that's where I got my competitiveness. It started on the horse.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
I always strive to be, well, especially better than my brother Keith.
Exactly. Your brother Keith was several years older than you, and any accomplishment mm-hmm. that he made, you would do it.
I would try.
I wouldn't always do it.
But.
I remember the time when Keith had won an oratory talk in grade school, and he had gotten first prize and pleased us all. When you were several years younger, and when your turn came, got to that age, you'd been waiting to compete with Keith. No one knew that but you. And so you asked me, you says, Dad, can you help me write us a speech for my contest? And I said, sure. And we sat down and we wrote this thing. And then we went to the contest, and it wasn't that speech at all. It was a completely different speech. And you won first place, just like Keith. You had competed. And I said, darling, what happened to the speech that we worked on? And she said, well, Dad, that was probably more yours than mine. And you rewrote it. So that says a lot about you, about how you've lived and how you've had a great impact on me, really, to have a daughter like that. And when I would paint in a studio, and you would hang out with me, and so you would paint too, just a little thing. And I would look at your paintings and think, oh my God, they were so free and expressive and real. Gosh, so maybe I should be copying her instead of her copying me, you know. So it's been that kind of a relationship, and it's been great. Thank you very much.
Mm. Well, then I think I quickly sort of changed as I realized that that was your way, that was your art form.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went totally in a different
yeah,
direction.
You did. Yeah.
So our art, the little bit of it I've made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well.
Never ended up like yours at all.
Never, ever, no. Once you get through that period of watching your dad, that was an introduction, and then you found yourself again, as in every case, you know, you became Stephanie, and you found out who you were, and that's what every artist, in my opinion, should do, is never emulate, but find out who they are, and that's oftentimes a difficult thing to do. Mm-hmm. You know, that's been one of the bases of my teaching over the years, too, is like a lot of times students will emulate their teachers. And I'll let that happen for a while, you know, because there's something to be learned about, mm-hmm. about that. In fact, there was an ancient technique in China that a student would emulate the master until the student's work looked exactly like the master, and you couldn't tell the difference. And then the master would say, "Now you're ready to go out and be an artist, but never, ever paint like me again." Mm-hmm. And it's sort of the same thing. I would let students emulate me for a while, but I'd have to have a talk with them and say, you know, look, you don't want to be me. You want to be you. And the hardest thing for an artist, a writer, or a scientist is to find out who you are, mm-hmm. to go inward and discover yourself. Do not be an emulator, be an inventor and a creator. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's certainly been you. And so I wonder, is there any materials, anything that you haven't been able to work with in your art that you would have liked to have? I know you wanted to cast some big pieces, some big bronze pieces.
Well, the irony of that is that when you're working on a really large scale, I mean a really large scale, you almost have to have a commission. Mm-hmm. And I've built, you know, some big pieces, but they were always commissioned because I was never wealthy, I guess, enough to just make those things on my own. And the irony, again, is that I taught casting for mm-hmm. years, mm-hmm. And I made castings on a human scale. But, yeah, I've always wanted to do very, very large castings. And I've had to take a kind of second material, like instead of bronze or whatever, I would maybe make it in clay mm-hmm. or in plaster or in some material that I could afford. And that's and that makes me sad to even say that, mm-hmm. that I couldn't realize some of my dreams because of the fact that I couldn't do them from standpoint of expense.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've never thought of this before, but maybe some of those pieces will happen even later.
Well,
even
I hope so.
You know, that happens.
I hope so.
Quite often. You think of Dale Eldred and mm-hmm. his steeple of light.
Yeah, which didn't happen for years later. Mm-hmm. Well, the thing about it is, as you know probably, maybe not, I have a lot of sketches. One way that I got to realize some of those things that I couldn't really do because of scale was I could draw them. Mm-hmm. And I have sketchbooks full of drawings of large pieces that perhaps someday might be mm-hmm. made. But even if they're not, that was a way of me realizing a dream or an idea. If I could put it down, even in a drawing or a small model, that was good. Mm-hmm. I could get it done in my mind and then go on, you know.
Which brings me around to ask you about your work. You've been very prolific.
Mm-hmm.
You have work all over the world,
mm-hmm.
in museums, and but the work that pieces that haven't been donated, or what would you like to see happen to your work?
Well, that is a good question. Because I am prolific, someone just asked me outside a few minutes ago, said, oh, Jim, are you still working? And I said, well, I'm still alive, so yes, I'll be working as long as I can crawl around and do it, because that's what my life is about. And so I do have a lot of stuff. I'm having a retrospect at a museum in California, in Los Angeles, in November, is it?
Mm-hmm.
And they came and picked up 75 pieces of my work. Now, generally, when you get to be my age and you're having a retrospect, you have to collect that work back in from museums, from galleries, from private owners, and so on. But I've made so much, and during the time of making that over the years, making my stuff over the years, I have kept pieces out and put them in storerooms, as you know, because you have to deal with that. And I want them to eventually go into important places. You know, that's not an ego thing. It's just that's what I think any artist wants.
Mm-hmm.
And I would also like to see in the Leedy Vocus Arts Center that we've created, and you've been an equally important part of that, is that we cut off it's a big building, and we rent out studios to artists.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to take one floor over the main gallery and turn it into a Jim Leedy gallery of my own work and the works of my friends that I've traded with over the years. That's something I would like to see, but, you know,
mm-hmm.
that's yet to hopefully materialize.
Then possibly we would have people donating your colleagues and friends,
mm-hmm.
pieces maybe that we don't have already.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of pieces that I have traded mm-hmm. in my collection already, and some of them I lost, but we have a pretty good collection already. And of course it would be my work predominantly. I might say also, Stephanie, that I'd like for your work to be in that collection, because, you know, I have Stephanie Leedy's in my collection as well, and they're unique and wonderful, and they are you.
And there are very few of them.
Yeah, well, that's partially because I turned the gallery over to you several years ago, and you've been putting your time into running.
Having kids.
And having children. Of course, women always have that dilemma. And that's one of the most creative things any person could do, not just a woman, is to have children.
Mm-hmm.
And you have done a phenomenal job with those children. You know, they're now just finished college this past year. And one of them's getting married soon. Aaron's getting married, and they're the best kids. I mean, they're just perfect.
Well, I think so.
Yeah, well, they are.
Stephanie, can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
What was it like growing up with a father who was an artist compared to, like, your friends and everything? What were some of your favorite memories of growing up with an artistic father?
Well, I've had people ask me this before, and I always kind of go back to the story. When you grow up with it, you don't think that it's any different than anybody else's family or father. But I think probably somewhere in grade school, and we'd moved to Lake Lackawanna, and I was just going into second grade. And actually, Dad started teaching art history here at the Art Institute first, and then went into the sculpture department shortly after. But I would invite my friends over. So we were new to the lake, a few years go by, and these kids who had never, ever seen, we had, you know, there was sculpture all over the house, his ceramic pieces, and with, you know, dead animal parts on them.
We don't have to go there.
They would go home, tell their parents, you know, guess what I saw? There were a few kids that weren't allowed to come back, at least until they got to know who you were and you weren't some crazy odd person that their kid was going to spend the night, you know.
That's a surprise.
Your daughter's house.
That's a surprise to me. I didn't.
Really?
No, I didn't realize that. Because I've always been on sort of a cloud nine. I don't know what's going on in the real world sometimes.
I also think, though, that once they did, and then especially in the late 60s, early 70s, you were just about as cool of a dad as a kid could ever have. And I know Keith thinks that, too.
Yeah, my son. I remember once, Steph, when I was, I rode a motorcycle a lot. And I'd go by your school and pick you up after school and take you home. Or we'd go for a ride in the neighborhood or in the country or something. And I asked you after you got grown, I said, wasn't that fun when I'd come by and pick you up on the motorcycle at your grade school? And you said to me, you said, oh, Dad, I was so embarrassed. But you didn't show it. You know, you were cool with your dad.
I think that was probably just the age of when you realize that things are different around you. Your father's got longer hair and a big long beard, and nobody else's father.
That's true.
Pierced ears. So I guess that was the only embarrassment. But I have not really been very embarrassed. No.
Well, we have to also realize the age of the time that was, you know, in the 60s and 70s. That was the hippie era. I was never a real hippie in my own mind. I was a college professor, but we had, you know, kids coming back from Vietnam and letting their hair grow. Well, everybody knows how the 60s was. And instead of being that straight-laced professor standing at the front of the room, I always wanted to be more related to what the students were about, you know. And so I dressed like the students.
But also that's a good point. You know, because you've taught and you've been around pretty much the same age kids, anywhere from, say, 18 to 25, 30 through school, you've had to pretty much stay up on the newest
absolutely.
Ideas. You always stayed that age along with them because you never really grew old.
No.
You still haven't grown old.
Oh, thanks.
I tried to give him a retirement party, and he was so offended. The word retire just...
No.
And he got up and he gave a speech that you were offended.
Yeah.
And you were not retiring, which wasn't my goal, was to, I guess, you know, that's the wrong word to use.
It was retiring from teaching.
Yeah.
And that, of course, what you knew, I don't retire from making art. And I was just trying to make that clear, you know. Some And something more about when you're teaching and you put yourself on a pedestal, you don't get all the way, in my opinion, through to the student or students. You have to, it's a strange balance. You have to be on their level, yet at the same time, respected. Mm-hmm. I could never become one of them, but I could play guitar with them. I could, you know, talk on the same level and do the same things, but I was, and that was the real challenge, still their teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I think that might be one of the reasons why I have so many friends today that were my ex-students. You know, one of the most wonderful things that can happen to me is to get a call or a letter from a student from 10 or even longer years ago and say, "Oh, Jim, I just wanted to call. I was thinking about you and how important you are into my life."
Mm-hmm.
And no teacher can ever be more pleased.
And the amazing thing is you remember all those students.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They're my friends.
Mm-hmm.
When students would graduate, I am now retired from teaching. When my students would graduate, the last thing I would say to them is, like, because you've graduated doesn't mean that our friendship has ended.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still here for you. And and a lot of them do take mm-hmm. advantage of that. Sometimes
too much.
Yeah, to a point like, leave me alone. No.
Well, but I do think you missed, and I think you still miss having that interaction with
absolutely.
Students. And
absolutely. Absolutely. I, for years, until we got so many students that I couldn't do it, I put my studio, had my studio in the building where I taught. And so I worked right along with the students, you know, so that they could see me working and we could talk about what I'm doing as well as what they're doing. And I think that's a great way to teach. It certainly worked
mm-hmm.
in our situation.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's true. When I was in school there, and I was your student, although I worked a lot with Dale Eldred,
yeah, my colleague.
Mm-hmm. That was a really wonderful thing about that school is that all the teachers there at that time were showing and
mm-hmm.
visiting artist program that we had.
That was part of the requirement. To mm-hmm. teach there, you had to be a producing artist.
Mm-hmm.
That was unique. Because
mm-hmm.
I'd been in the university system before that, and that wasn't required. But in order to teach at the Kansas City Art Institute, I don't know if that's still true today. Mm-hmm. I would hope so. You had to be a producing artist. And that made all the difference in the world. In fact, when I was first invited to come here to teach, I thought, nah, I don't want to do that, you know. We have a farm, we have a home, And then I came. They said, well, come and just visit and we'll have a party. So I did. And I saw that every student there was an art major. Might be in different areas of design or ceramics or sculpture or painting or whatever. But they were all art students.
Mm-hmm.
And in the university system, you were lucky to really get a good student. Sometimes that student was from, usually from another department,
mm-hmm.
PE or whatever, you know, and they'd take an art class because they had to and found out that, whoa, I really like art.
Mm-hmm. I know people that happen to.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the things that excited me and delighted me at that time was like, wow, every student here is an art major,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that was a That's the reason why I made the decision to come here, actually.
Do you think if you hadn't have had kids, and this is probably a hard question to answer, do you think you would have spent as many years teaching? If you hadn't have had Keith and I.
Yeah, you have my own kids.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you think your life would have taken a different
turn? Yeah, of course it would have. When you're an artist, unless you become very well known soon, quickly, it's not easy to make a living. You have to have a job. And I tell my students that, you know, until you get well known enough to make a living from the sale of your art or whatever, mm-hmm. performances or whatever, you still have to live. And especially if you have children, you have to get a job. That job supports your habits, so to speak, as an artist. Well, I figured that out when I was in undergraduate. I had a teacher, and he was a good teacher. And I asked him one day, I said, "Can I see your work? I'd love to see your work." And he said, "Oh, I don't work anymore. I don't paint anymore." And I thought, "Why not?" He says, "Well, I get all of my satisfaction from my students' works." And I thought, whoa, what kind of a trap is this? I don't ever want to get caught up in that.
Mm-hmm.
And at first I didn't think I would teach. And that's why, in fact, I went into art history and did graduate work in art history and PhD work in art history. Was I thought, well, I could teach art history, and that's not directly teaching art.
Mm-hmm.
And I can make a living. I didn't want to drive a taxi cab or be a carpenter or whatever. I wanted to be an artist. So I'll be an artist in an art community. And I'll teach art history, which I love. And I think it's the knowledge of art history and teaching art history has influenced my own work, mm-hmm. over the years, especially my interest in Asian art and so on, but all of it. And anyway, I thought, you know, that guy is not someone I want to be. I want to be an artist. I don't want to be satisfied with what my students do as my own satisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went into teaching. And then you guys, my son and my daughter, came up. And I never told you I wanted you to go into art. You know, that was your choice. I said, well, you know, if you want to, that's what you should do. And I'll never forget you when you were in high school. I think you were a junior. And you were so anxious to get into art school, you didn't want to wait another year. And you said, you came home one day from school and announced to me, like, "Dad, I'm starting art school next year." And I said, "Darling, you have a senior year to go through yet." And you said, "Yeah, I know, but I'm starting art school next year." And I said, "Well, how are you going to do that?" And you said, "Well, I'm going to take that GED test." And I said, "Yeah, sure. Okay, that's what I'm thinking." "Okay, baby, I never discouraged you." And you took that test and you passed it, and you were in art school the next year, youngest student in class.
Yeah, I was actually 16 years old when I started the Art Institute. My birthday was just right after school started, but officially. And so I missed out on my junior and senior year of high school.
Yeah.
Which was just fine by me.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't fit the mold.
Well, you were just already beyond that. You already knew what you were and where you were going. And I'm very proud of you, extremely proud of you for doing that. You know, at the time I was concerned, you know, that, whoa, is she pushing too fast? But you did it. And another thing, Steph, that happened several years later, you were talking to someone, and I happened to be standing nearby, and they said, Steph, why would you want to go to school and study with your father when all of these other schools around the world? And you said, well, why would I go to a school with less qualified teachers when I can go to school and study with my dad, who is the most qualified of all? Mm-hmm. And that was impressive. Mm-hmm. That made me feel good, because I had worried about that myself. But then you went on. You went to graduate school, mm-hmm. had other teachers, went to Tyler School of Art at Temple University, and you were fine.
Mm-hmm. I moved back here, had kids,
mm-hmm.
your grandkids.
My grandkids.
Raised them, helped you with the art center, still helping you with the art center.
Well, that's something I do want to say before we end our discussion, that was a dream of mine, and people would ask me later, you know, Jim, did you ever think this would develop as much as it had? And I said, of course. I dreamed it. It was my dream. I fought for it. I worked for it, whatever, to make it happen. And one of the reasons that I can now let go is you're there. You've taken it over, and you've given me time now to put full time in my studio. You run the arts center, and you run the studios, and I hope you're happy doing that. You know?
It's been a little physically challenging, but I'm trying to move past that.
Well, it wasn't an easy job, and I know it's not an easy job. But
I hope that I can pass it on to my kids,
exactly,
for them to run.
Yeah.
So let's hope that Kansas City lets us stay there.
Yeah, well.
And continue what we've started.
Well, they know how important we are to the city. We've been given awards, you know, for saving old buildings, awards for bringing business back downtown, the Heroes Award or whatever it was. And the city knows. Maybe the county who raises taxes are not quite aware of what we've contributed. But as long as we've got the city to support us and understands. In fact, the present mayor just called the other day and said, you know, you guys are legendary, and we want to support you and hope you will support us, you know.
Well, yeah, I hope we're around for a long time, because the education, I think, more than anything that we've provided down there, is extremely important to the city, to, you know, the surrounding counties and the people that we attract down there.
Mm-hmm.
It's been very fun interviewing you.
Jim, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
And when you respond, just talking to them.
All right.
What do you want your artistic legacy to be? You know, like, if people had to remember you by something, what would you want for that to be?
Well, I would hope that my legacy is my work itself. You know, you look at great artists in history, and it's not so much their story. I know that stories are very often times interesting. Take Van Gogh, for example. You know, he's as famous almost as a personality as an artist. But in the end, he is famous for his art. A great artist like Rembrandt Van Ryn was so determined to do his own thing that he got very few commissions later in his life, and he's one of the greatest artists of all times. And when he died, he was in poverty. But his work has stood up. We know him not because he was in poverty, but because he was true to himself and he's one of the great artists of all times. I would hope that my legacy will be my artwork. But on the other hand, too, I do want the arts district that we have created to continue to be a valid and viable thing in the city, and it's had influences on other cities as well. And I do want that to continue, and I've got Stephanie who will carry that forward, I think. And I think it also has gained enough momentum that it will go. Because now, when we started that, we were the only one in town. And there's now, 80 galleries in the district. And the new performance center that's going in, which came there, no doubt, because we had established that as an arts district. That legacy, I think, will go on. But in the end, the one thing that I want to represent me after I'm gone is my artwork.
Mm-hmm. I think you've done that. Thank you.
Thank you, baby. It's really, excuse me for calling you that, but you are my baby. Thank you, darling.
My name is Stephanie Leedy. I'm 50 years old, but I'll be 51 in just a couple of days. This is a reminder. Today's date is September 9th, 2010. We are in Kansas City, Missouri, and I am Jim Leedy's daughter, and luckily so.
Thank you, darling. I am Jim Leedy. I am 79, but I'm pushing 80 pretty quickly. This is September the 9th, 2010. The location is Kansas City, Missouri. And this is my wonderful daughter, whom I don't think I could have gotten through life this far without her.
Okay. Don't make me cry already. Well... I had a hard time trying to think about what to ask you because I know you so well.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, I've been able to spend probably more years with my father than most kids ever do.
Yeah,
or
that's great.
Ever are allowed to.
Right, it's great.
You were my teacher,
mm-hmm.
my father,
mm-hmm.
my friend,
mm-hmm.
the person I told everything to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I guess I was thinking about this and thought you've had, I know, at least I think, a really wonderful life. You've been able to travel. You've been a mentor. Teacher to, well, I probably say thousands.
Yeah, thank you.
You were able to amazingly make your art and teach and be a great teacher at the same time. And you probably, more than anything, founded a arts district in downtown Kansas City called the Crossroads by being a brave, maybe brave, also maybe a little naive, buying a bunch of buildings.
yeah, when there was no future for them, really. But I had this dream that there would be a future.
I know. But a lot of people wouldn't have done that.
No, absolutely not.
They would not have had the vision.
In fact, when I try to get people involved, they'd say things like, you'll never get people to come down here. This is a part of the city that people won't come to. Or maybe if you buy these buildings, we could turn them into a parking space instead of an arts district. They just didn't have the vision that I had for it. That's very true.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you would like to see down there that maybe hasn't happened? Because as people in Kansas City know, when the artists started moving into your buildings, the coffee shops moved in, more galleries started mm-hmm. opening up, mm-hmm. then the developers moved in, mm-hmm. and so there's a lot happening down there, but I'm wondering if there's anything that you would, that hasn't happened that you would like to see.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good question. Before I answer it, I would like to say one thing, too, that if I had had a million daughters to choose from, I would have chosen you, darling. We've had a great life, I agree with you. Gosh, the things that we did together, like riding our horses, and I could tell stories about that, you know, how at three, I looked out the window, and when you were three, I looked out the window and I saw this little tiny baby charging by on a horse. And I thought, oh my God, is that Stephanie? And I ran out there to get you, and you were already gone. You were racing a car that was driving up the side of a road that went by our place on your horse. And the guy says, oh, yeah, she meets me out here every morning and races me up this hill. And I was just flabbergasted. I just couldn't believe it. And you've been that kind of yourself, chance taker and explorer all of your life. And it's made me very, very happy to be your father.
Stephanie, do you remember that? Mm-hmm. Do you remember the first time you did it? Or why you did it?
Well, I would sit on my horse and wait, because we were, at that time this was in Ohio, and I would wait for a car to come by
and race it.
And to give you a little more visual, I had a pixie haircut, wore no shirt, maybe had on my shorts and my red cowboy boots.
Yeah. And your feet stuck straight out, not down around the horse, because they weren't long enough.
I think the people in the cars, they'd come by, and I'm sure that they thought, oh, what a cute little boy over there.
Yeah, right.
The only way I could get up on that horse, too, was climb up on the fence and pull the horse over and make a leap over onto his back, her back.
Yeah. Was a him, wasn't it? Well,
Bridges.
Brandy. Oh, was it Bridges? Oh.
No, not Bridges. Oh, gosh. That was Lady.
Oh, exactly, Lady. Well, we've had several horses, mm-hmm. and it's hard to keep them all straight.
Mm-hmm.
But that was indeed very wonderful and delightful, even though it scared me to death. I asked my neighbors, I said, have you seen this? And they said, oh, yeah, she's out there every morning racing us up the hill. And it was just amazing. But you've been like that the rest, all of your life, and always a surprise and a pleasure to me.
Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're very welcome. Now, what was the question again?
I guess that's where I got my competitiveness. It started on the horse.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
I always strive to be, well, especially better than my brother Keith.
Exactly. Your brother Keith was several years older than you, and any accomplishment mm-hmm. that he made, you would do it.
I would try.
You
I
would try.
Always do it. But.
I remember the time when Keith had won an oratory talk in grade school, and he had gotten first prize and pleased us all. When you were several years younger, and when your turn came, got to that age, you'd been waiting to compete with Keith. No one knew that but you. And so you asked me, you says, Dad, can you help me write us a speech for my contest? And I said, sure. And we sat down and we wrote this thing. And then we went to the contest and it wasn't that speech at all. It was a completely different speech. And you won first place, just like Keith. You had competed. And I said, darling, what happened to the speech that we worked on? And she said, well, Dad, that was probably more yours than mine, and you rewrote it. So it says a lot about you, about how you've lived and how you've had a great impact on me, really, to have a daughter like that. And when I would paint in a studio, and you would hang out with me, and so you would paint too, just a little thing. And I would look at your paintings and think, oh my God, they were so free and expressive and real. And I thought, oh gosh, so maybe I should be copying her instead of her copying me, you know. So it's been that kind of a relationship, and it's been great. Thank you very much.
Well, then I think then I quickly sort of changed as I realized that that was your way, that was your art form.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went totally in a different
yeah,
direction.
Yeah.
So our art, the little bit of it I've made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well.
Never ended up like yours at all.
Never, ever. No. Once you got through that period of watching your dad, that was an introduction, and then you found yourself again, as in every case, you know, you became Stephanie, and you found out who you were, and that's what every artist, in my opinion, should do, is never emulate, but find out who they are, and that's oftentimes a difficult thing to do. Mm-hmm. You know, that's been one of the bases of my teaching over the years, too, is like a lot of times students will emulate their teachers. And I'll let that happen for a while, you know, because there's something to be learned about,
mm-hmm.
about that. In fact, there was an ancient technique in China that a student would emulate the master until the student's work looked exactly like the master, and you couldn't tell the difference. And then the master would say, now you're ready to go out and be an artist, but never, ever paint like me again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of the same thing. I would let students emulate me for a while, but I'd have to have a talk with them and say, you know, look, you don't want to be me. You want to be you. And the hardest thing for an artist, a writer, or a scientist is to find out who you are,
mm-hmm.
to go inward and discover yourself. Do not be an emulator. Be an inventor and a creator.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that's certainly been you. And so I wonder, is there any materials, anything that you haven't been able to work with in your art that you would have liked to have? I know you wanted to cast some big pieces, some big bronze pieces.
Well, the irony of that is that when you're working on a really large scale, I mean a really large scale, you almost have to have a commission.
Mm-hmm.
And I've built, you know, some big pieces, but they were always commissioned because I was never wealthy, I guess, enough to just make those things on my own. And the irony again is that I taught casting for
mm-hmm.
years,
mm-hmm.
And I made castings on a human scale. But yeah, I've always wanted to do very, very large castings. And I've had to take a kind of second material, like instead of bronze or whatever, I would maybe make it in clay
mm-hmm.
or in plaster. or in some material that I could afford. And that's and that makes me sad to even say that, that I couldn't realize some of my dreams because of the fact that I couldn't do them, from standpoint of expense.
Well, I've never thought of this before, but maybe some of those pieces will happen even later.
Well,
even
I hope so.
You know, that happens.
I hope
quite
so.
Often. You think of Dale Eldred and the steeple of light.
Yeah, which didn't happen for years later. Well, the thing about it is, as you know probably, maybe not, I have a lot of sketches. One way that I got to realize some of those things that I couldn't really do because of scale was I could draw them. And I have sketchbooks full of drawings of large pieces that perhaps someday might be made. But even if they're not, that was a way of me realizing a dream or an idea. If I could put it down, even in a drawing or a small model, that was good. I could get it done in my mind and then go on, you know.
Which brings me around to ask you about your work. You've been very prolific. You have work all over the world in museums. But the work that, pieces that haven't been donated, or what would you like to see happen to your work?
Well, that is a good question. Because I am prolific, someone just asked me outside a few minutes ago, said, oh, Jim, are you still working? And I said, well, I'm still alive, so yes, I'll be working as long as I can crawl around and do it, because that's what my life is about. And so I do have a lot of stuff. I'm having a retrospect at a museum in California, in Los Angeles, in November, is it? And they came and picked up 75 pieces of my work. Now, generally, when you get to be my age and you're having a retrospect, you have to collect that work back in from museums, from galleries, from private owners, and so on. But I've made so much, and during the time of making that over the years, making my stuff over the years, I have kept pieces out and put them in storerooms, as you know, because you have to deal with that. And I want them to eventually go into important places. You know, that's not an ego thing. It's just that's what I think any artist wants. And I would also like to see in the Leedy Vocus Arts Center that we've created, and you've been an equally important part of that, is that we cut off it's a big building, and we rent out studios to artists. And I'd like to take one floor over the main gallery and turn it into a Jim Leedy gallery of my own work and the works of my friends that I've traded with over the years. That's something I would like to see, but, you know, that's yet to hopefully materialize.
Then possibly we would have people donating your colleagues and friends pieces maybe that we don't have already.
I have a lot of pieces that I have traded in my collection already, and some of them I lost, but we have a pretty good pretty good collection already. And of course it would be my work predominantly. I might say also, Stephanie, that I'd like for your work to be in that collection, because, you know, I have Stephanie Leedy's in my collection as well. And they're unique and wonderful, and they are you.
And there are very few of them.
Yeah, well, that's partially because I turned the gallery over to you several years ago, and you've been putting your time into running.
Having kids.
And having children. Of course, women always have that dilemma. And that's one of the most creative things any person could do, not just a woman, is to have children. Mm-hmm. And you have done a phenomenal job with those children. You know, they're now just finished college this past year. And one of them's getting married soon. Aaron's getting married. And they're the best kids. I mean, they're just perfect.
Well, I think so.
Yeah, well, they are.
Stephanie, can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
What was it like growing up with a father who was an artist compared to, like, your friends and everything? What were some of your favorite memories of growing up with an artistic father?
Well, I've had people ask me this before, and I always kind of go back to the story. When you grow up with it, you don't think that it's any different than anybody else's family or father. But I think probably somewhere in grade school, and we'd moved to Lake Lackawanna, and I was just going into second grade. And actually, Dad started teaching art history here at the Art Institute first,
mm-hmm.
And then went into the sculpture department shortly after.
Mm-hmm.
But I would invite my friends over. So we were new to the lake, a few years go by, and these kids who had never, ever seen, we had, you know, there was sculpture all over the house, his ceramic pieces, and with, you know, dead animal parts on them.
We don't have to go there.
They would go home, tell their parents, you know, guess what I saw?
Oh.
There were a few kids that weren't allowed to come back, at least until they got to know who you were and that you weren't some crazy odd person that their kid was going to spend the night, you know.
That's a surprise.
Your daughter's house.
That's a surprise to me. I didn't.
Really?
No, I didn't realize that. Because I've always been on sort of a cloud nine. I don't know what's going on in the real world sometimes.
I also think, though, that once they did, and then especially in the late 60s, early 70s, you were just about as cool of a dad as a kid could ever have. And I know Keith thinks that, too.
Yeah, my son. I remember once, Steph, when I was, I rode a motorcycle a lot. Mm-hmm. And I'd go by your school and pick you up after school and take you home, or we'd go for a ride in the neighborhood or in the country or something. And I asked you after you got grown, I said, wasn't that fun when I'd come by and pick you up on the motorcycle at your grade school? And you said to me, you said, oh, Dad, I was so embarrassed. But you didn't show it, you know, you were cool with your dad.
I think that was probably just the age of when you realize that things are different around you. Your father's got longer hair and a big long beard, and nobody else's father.
That's true.
Pierced ears. So I guess that was the only embarrassment. But I have not really been very embarrassed. No.
Well, we have to also realize the age of the time that was, you know, in the 60s and 70s. That was the hippie era. I was never a real hippie in my own mind. I was a college professor, but we had, you know, kids coming back from Vietnam and and letting their hair grow. Well, everybody mm-hmm. knows how the 60s was. And instead of being that straight-laced professor standing at the front of the room, I always wanted to be more related to what the students were about, you mm-hmm. know, and so I dressed like the students.
Mm-hmm. But also, that's a good point. You know, because you've taught and you've been around pretty much the same age kids, anywhere from, say, 18 to 25, 30 mm-hmm. through school,
mm-hmm.
You've had to pretty much stay up on the newest
absolutely.
Ideas. You always stayed that age
mm-hmm.
along with them
yeah.
because you never really grew old.
No.
You still haven't grown old.
Oh, thanks.
I tried to give him a retirement party, and he was so offended. The word retire just...
No.
And he got up and he gave a speech that you were offended.
Yeah.
And you were not retiring, which wasn't my goal, was to... I guess, you know, that's the wrong word to use.
It was retiring from teaching.
Yeah.
And... that, of course, what you knew, I don't retire from making art.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just trying to make that clear, you know. Some and something more about when you're teaching and you put yourself on a pedestal, you don't get all the way, in my opinion, through to the student or students. You have to, it's a strange balance. You have to be on their level, yet at the same time, respected. Mm-hmm. I could never become one of them, but I could play guitar with them. I could, you know, talk on the same level and do the same things, but I was, and that was the real challenge, still their teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And that was... I think that might be one of the reasons why I have so many friends today that were my ex-students. You know, one of the most wonderful things that can happen to me is to get a call or a letter from a student from 10 or even longer years ago and say, "Oh, Jim, I just wanted to call. I was thinking about you and how important you are into my life."
Mm-hmm.
And... no teacher can ever be more pleased.
And the amazing thing is, you remember all those students.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They're my friends.
Mm-hmm.
When students would graduate, I am now retired from teaching. When my students would graduate, the last thing I would say to them is, like, because you've graduated doesn't mean that our friendship has ended.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still here for you. And a lot of them do take mm-hmm. advantage of that. Sometimes
too much.
Yeah, to a point like, leave me alone. No.
Well, but I do think you missed, and I think you still miss having that interaction with
absolutely.
Students. And
absolutely. Absolutely. I, for years... until we got so many students that I couldn't do it. I put my studio, had my studio in the building where I taught. And so I worked right along with the students, you know, so that they could see me working and we could talk about what I'm doing as well as what they're doing. And I think that's a great way to teach. It certainly worked.
Mm-hmm.
In our situation.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's true. When I was in school there, and I was your student, although I worked a lot with Dale Eldred,
yeah, my colleague.
Mm-hmm. That was a really wonderful thing about that school is that all the teachers there at that time were showing and
mm-hmm.
visiting artist program that we had.
That was part of the requirement. Mm-hmm. To teach there, you had to be a producing artist.
Mm-hmm.
That was unique. Because
mm-hmm.
I'd been in the university system before that, and that wasn't required. But in order to teach at the Kansas City Art Institute, I don't know if that's still true today. Mm-hmm. I would hope so. You had to be a producing artist. And that made all the difference in the world. In fact, when I was first invited to come here to teach, I thought, nah, I don't want to do that, you know. We have a farm, we have a home, then I came. They said, well, come and just visit and we'll have a party. So I did. And I saw that every student there was an art major. Might be in different areas of design or ceramics or sculpture or painting or whatever. But they were all art students.
Mm-hmm.
And in the university system, you were lucky to really get a good student. Sometimes that student was usually from another department,
mm-hmm.
PE or whatever, you know, and they'd take an art class because they had to and found out that, whoa, I really like art.
Mm-hmm. I know people that happen to.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the things that excited me and delighted me at that time was like, wow, every student here is an art major.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the reason why I made the decision to come here, actually.
Do you think if you hadn't have had kids, and this is probably a hard question to answer, do you think you would have spent as many years teaching? If you hadn't have had Keith and I.
Yeah, you have my own kids.
Mm-hmm. 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 I mean, how do you think your life would have taken a different
turn? Yeah, of course it would have. When you're an artist, unless you become very well known soon, quickly, it's not easy to make a living. You have to have a job. And I tell my students that, you know, until you get well known enough to make a living from the sale of your art or whatever, mm-hmm. performances or whatever, you still have to live. And especially if you have children, you have to get a job. That job supports your habits, so to speak, as an artist. Well, I figured that out. When I was in undergraduate, I had a teacher, and he was a good teacher. And I asked him one day, I said, can I see your work? I'd love to see your work. And he said, oh, I don't work anymore. I don't paint anymore. And I thought, why not? He says, well, I get all of my satisfaction from my students' works. And I thought, whoa, what kind of a trap is this? I don't ever want to get caught up in that.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, I didn't think I would teach. And that's why, in fact, I went into art history and did graduate work in art history and PhD work in art history, was I thought, well, I could teach art history, and that's not directly teaching art.
Mm-hmm.
And I can make a living. I didn't want to drive a taxi cab or be a carpenter or whatever. I wanted to be an artist. So I'll be an artist in an art community. And I'll teach art history, which I love. And I think it's the knowledge of art history and teaching art history has influenced my own work mm-hmm. over the years, especially my interest in Asian art and so on, but all of it. And anyway, I thought, you know, that guy is not someone I want to be. I want to be an artist. I don't want to be satisfied with what my students do as my own satisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went into teaching. And then you guys, my son and my daughter, came up. And I never told you I wanted you to go into art. You know, that was your choice. I said, well, you know, if you want to, that's what you should do. And I'll never forget you when you were in high school. I think you were a junior. And you were so anxious to get into art school, you didn't want to wait another year. And you said, you came home one day from school and announced to me, like, Dad, I'm starting art school next year. And I said, darling, you have a senior year to go through yet. And you said, yeah, I know, but I'm starting art school next year. And I said, well, how are you going to do that? And you said, well, I'm going to take that GED test. And I said, yeah, sure, okay, that's what I'm thinking. Okay, baby, I never discouraged you. And you took that test, and you passed it, and you were in art school the next year, youngest student in class.
Yeah, I was actually 16 years old when I started the Art Institute.
Yeah.
That was my birthday. It was just right after school started, but officially. And so I missed out on my junior and senior year of high school.
Yeah.
Which was just fine by me.
Yeah.
Well, you didn't fit the mold.
Well, you were just already beyond that. You already knew what you were and where you were going. And I'm very proud of you, extremely proud of you for doing that. You know, at the time I was concerned, you know, that, whoa, is she pushing too fast? But you did it. And another thing, Steph, that happened several years later, you were talking to someone, and I happened to be standing nearby, and they said, Steph, why would you want to go to school and study with your father when all of these other schools around the world? And you said, well, why would I go to a school with less qualified teachers when I can go to school and study with my dad, who is the most qualified of all? Mm-hmm. And that was impressive.
Mm-hmm.
That made me feel good, because I had worried about that myself. But then you went on. You went to graduate school,
mm-hmm.
had other teachers, went to Tyler School of Art at Temple University, and you were fine.
Mm-hmm. I moved back here, had kids,
mm-hmm.
your grandkids.
My grandkids.
Raised them, helped you with the art center. Still helping you with the Art Center?
Well, that's something I do want to say before we end our discussion, that was a dream of mine. And people would ask me later, you know, Jim, did you ever think this would develop as much as it had? And I said, of course. I dreamed it. It was my dream. I fought for it. I worked for it, whatever, to make it happen. And one of the reasons that I can now let go is you're there. You've taken it over, and you've given me time now to put full time in my studio. You run the Art Center, and you run the studios, and I hope you're happy doing that. You know?
It's been a little physically challenging, but I'm trying to move past that.
Well, it wasn't an easy job, and I know it's not an easy job. But
I hope that I can pass it on to my kids,
exactly.
For them to run.
Yeah.
So let's hope that Kansas City lets us stay there.
Yeah. Well,
and continue what we've started.
Well, they know how important we are to the city. We've been given awards, you know, for saving old buildings, awards for bringing business back downtown, the Heroes Award or whatever it was. And the city knows. Maybe the county who raises taxes are not quite aware of what we've contributed. But as long as we've got the city to support us, and understands. In fact, the present mayor just called the other day and said, you know, you guys are legendary, and we want to support you and hope you will support us, you know.
Well, yeah, I hope we're around for a long time, because the education, I think, more than anything that we've provided down there, is extremely important to the city, to, you know, the surrounding counties and the people that we attract down there.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's been very fun interviewing you.
Jim, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
And when you respond, just talking to the
All right.
What do you want your artistic legacy to be? You know, like if people had to remember you by something, what would you want for that to be?
Well, I would hope that my legacy is my work itself. You know, you look at great artists in history, and it's not so much their story. I know that stories are very often times interesting. Take Van Gogh, for example. You know, he's as famous almost as a personality as an artist. But in the end, he is famous for his art. A great artist like Rembrandt Van Ryn was so determined to do his own thing that he got very few commissions later in his life, and he's one of the greatest artists of all times. And when he died, he was in poverty. But his work has stood up. We know him not because he was in poverty, but because he was true to himself. And he's one of the great artists of all times. I would hope that my legacy will be my artwork. But on the other hand, too, I do want the arts district that we have created to continue to be a valid and viable thing in the city, and it's had influences on other cities as well. And I do want that to continue, and I've got Stephanie who will carry that forward, I think. And I think it also has gained enough momentum that it will go, because now, when we started that, we were the only one in town, and there's now, 80 galleries in the district, and the new performance center that's going in, which came there no doubt because we had established that as an arts district. That legacy, I think, will go on. But in the end, the one thing that I want to represent me after I'm gone is my artwork.
Mm-hmm. I think you've done that. Thank you.
Thank you, baby. It's really, excuse me for calling you that, but you are my baby. Thank you, darling.